Today on The Concert Experience, we're going to talk to Terry Elus about his new solo album, Gypsy Dreams, which is now available. So hang out and give us a listen.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome to The Concert Experience. I'm Christian Blatt. You can find me on social media at ChristianDMZ. And joined, as I said in the intro, by Terry Elus. Now, I'm getting it right. It's Elus.
Yes. All
right.
No, it's not Jerry Lewis.
No, because okay. That would be a very different... We'd be doing this for 30 hours and trying to raise money for kids.
And we'd be laughing a lot.
Hey! Yeah,
hey,
but,
yo!
Lady! But, great. Thanks so much for joining us here in the studio. I always appreciate it when somebody takes the trip to beautiful, scenic downtown North Hollywood. So we're going to talk to you about the new album, which we're listening to, Whole Lot of Love. Let's shut up for a moment and just enjoy it. Make sure people hear Whole Lot of Love. And so the album, Gypsy Dreams, is a collection of 9 covers of music that is rearranged in this style. It's funny because to me it's interesting that it's called Gypsy Dreams, because what it reminded me of, basically a few seconds into Whole Lot of Love, it reminded me of the Gypsy Kings did this version of Hotel California for this collection. For
it's a good one, too.
I'm not going to lie. I like that version of Hotel California better than the Eagles version. So it's a very controversial standpoint. You don't have to stand by me on that. And I was just like, oh, yeah. And I always liked that idea of just rearranging it like this. And so you have some great songs on here. And then, you know, a lot of them, they kind of make sense. The collection, you know, you're going to have Led Zeppelin. Sure, you'd have Rainbow and Def Leppard and Black Sabbath and Christopher Cross, which is an interesting choice, and the Doobie Brothers. So talk a little bit about the collection of songs and where they came from, you know, sort of why you chose these 9 specific songs.
Well, you know, a song brings you back to a certain moment in time. You know, if you think about it, you know, you a moment where you're happy or sad or whatever. And when I made the selection of songs, I remember certain specific songs, like, for example, the Don Henley song.
Boys of Summer, yes.
Yeah, Boys of Summer. I remember being in Spain when I was a kid, and because, as you can tell, I'm not from here, right?
Right. You sound to me like you're probably from up north, Northern California, yeah.
Yeah, boy, I'm actually from the south, boy.
Yes, you grew up in France.
I grew up in France and Spain.
And Spain.
Yeah, my parents, my dad was a Spaniard. Oh, and my mom is French. She's actually from Africa. And I grew up with that type of culture. And I remember being on vacation with my parents, and I fell in love with this beautiful Swedish girl. And for the entire summer, I tried to convince her to do things, good things, by the way. And nothing happened. It's just, you know, she was too tall. I'm kind of short.
I can definitely relate to that. We have that in common. Yeah.
So she was gorgeous. And I remember watching that in 85, 86. I watched the Don Henley video. And immediately I thought, it brought me back to that time when I was a young kid and trying to chase that love. And that didn't happen. And the lyrics, of course, were very similar to that. So I... when I made the choice, the selection for songs, I immediately thought of Don Henley, Boys of Summer.
Yeah, no. I mean, and it's a great song. And, you know, there's a... I didn't do smart research. So there's a popular version of that that's been covered in the last few years that you'll hear a lot. And, you know, it's such a great song. And it's funny because you can present those emotions in different ways. You know, there's obviously the original Don Henley version. And we're hearing a little of it for our listeners and viewers right now. A little bit of Boys of Summer. And, you know, it's just there's so much emotion to it, though, is the point. And you sort of present it in a very different way.
Well, music is about emotion. Yeah. I mean, it's about feeling something and making sure you can share that with your audience. That's what it's all about. You know, we have to be in touch with the audience. So music is all about emotion. Whatever type of emotions we're talking about, could be anger or could be love, could be whatever. It's you have to be in touch with the audience and in touch with your emotions.
Yeah, and it always has this sort of somber sound to it, you know, Boys of Summer. It's always sort of looking back wistfully. Maybe it's because of, you know, a young lady.
The lyrics,
Maybe it's a young lady that you remember not being willing to do things with you, or, you know, just summer. You know, I think, like, if you hear this song in the winter, it could just make you sad if you live in a part of the country or part of the world. You know, if you live in Russia and you hear this song in the winter, you're like, oh man, summer sure was good. But yes. You know,
if you live in Minnesota,
yeah, right, in Minnesota, you're just like, you turn the song off, you're like, no, it's too far away, I can't even think about
though I
it.
Like Minnesota, actually.
Yeah, I've some great friends that live in Minnesota. Yeah. It's a great rock and roll town. Minneapolis
is great.
So it's just cold, so I guess, you know,
it's,
you
bloody
go inside,
cold over there. I mean,
you go,
it's like,
you go
oh
inside
God.
And you learn how to play some music, because what else are you going to do there? I mean, that's a great song, and obviously Peter Gabriel In Your Eyes is already just such a well-known emotional song. I mean, it gets used in movies all the time, but you also rearranged that for the album, which we're talking about.
I gave it more of a flamenco vibe. Yeah. You know, Christian, I grew up listening to all kinds of music. It was very diverse. My dad used to tell me, you need to listen to this, you need to listen to that. My dad was a guitar player, a jazz guitar player. So he imbued me with a love of music. He showed me diversity. And I grew up listening to flamenco, of course, in Spain, you know, flamenco, yeah, then rock, then anything, you know. And I realized you have to mix things up, you know, and that's what this album is all about.
Yeah, no, and it's great. I mean, and I just, you know, we'll, a little bit later, we're going to listen to the tribute to Chris Isaak, Wicked Game, which is a great song. And I mean, he's a fantastic musician, but that's probably the song he's best known for. You know, I think that was like 1990, I want to guess.
1990, when I was I was 15 years old.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You were 14?
I was actually 14 in 1990. So, yeah, I know, I remember. And I think the first time I heard it, he was performing on Saturday Night Live, and I had never heard a recorded version of it. And I'm like, I don't know who this guy is, but he's
great.
Amazing. Yeah. And, you know, it never hurts in those days when you have a music video where you're rolling around on the beach with a pretty girl, you know?
She was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope she still is. I'm sure she's
still.
Yeah, she
is still. She's a beauty.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit more about some of those songs, and we'll give a little bit of a listen to it. But I want to talk to you about some of the people who you collaborated with, because, you know, your day job, your other job, you're the singer for Great White. So, as you were putting this album together, who are some of the people you worked with?
I was very fortunate to work with some great Spanish and flamenco musicians that are very well known in the Latin community. You know, on guitar we have Luis Villegas. He's a Grammy nominated guitar player. Ben Woods on guitar also. Jose Garcia is a guitar player from Tecate, Mexico. Great singer also. Miguel Paganini on bass, Mike Bennett on cajon, Al Velasquez also on cajon, and
now I could Jesse pretend Stern. I could pretend that I know what cajon is. And just
a cajon is
on,
a little box. Okay, for you guys out there, a cajon is a little box. You see, like a little box this size. You know, you can sit on it. Actually, you're supposed to sit on it, and you tap.
Oh, okay.
And you tap, and you have, depending on where you play, when you tap, you can have like a snare. Or a bass drum, or almost like a bass drum or a snare. So,
okay.
You know, if you think the kids in Africa, in Spain, they used to sit in a little box and play like that. Well, that's basically what it is.
Yeah, like growing up, you know, in New York, I would see, you know, you'd see kids playing a white bucket, basically. Yeah. And it's
well,
a
it's a modern white bucket.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, and I mean, obviously, yeah, I've certainly seen that now that you describe what it is. I did not know that that's
cajon,
what it's called, the cajon. But that's obviously a very important part to this kind of
not
sound.
Yes, I'm sorry.
The cajon is an important part to the sound for this
it's
sound,
what
kind of
a flamenco player use all the time in Spain. They use a cajon. They use other things as well, different percussions. But the cajon is a main instrument.
Now, you've said about this album that it's the start in a series of different projects you have in mind for the future. Can you say anything about some of the other ones, or that you're just getting started with this one?
I'm just getting started.
Right. Do you tour for an album like this, or just do a few shows here and there? I know that Great White, of course, still tours very vigorously, which is great that they're still able to go out there. But are you doing a lot of shows to promote this?
When the schedule with Great White allows it, yes. Yeah. I will be doing shows with the guys, the flamenco guys. My main priority, of course, is Great White.
Yeah.
We do a lot of shows. We have a new album coming out June 2nd.
June 2nd, yeah, I saw that.
We're very fortunate to be still selling out. It's pretty amazing. The band has been around for 34 years now, and we still sell out. I mean, we did a show last week. We did a show the week before. We had like 4,000 people, and there were 3,000 people. I think it's amazing, because today's music has changed so much that...
Yeah, that there's still, obviously, people still have an appreciation for, look, it'd be a lot of people that are my age that liked all this music when they were younger, when they were 14 and 19.
When you were 14 and 15, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. When we were basically the same age. And, but I think that, kids today still find music like this, and they're like, oh, no, I do like music. They're like, it's not all...
My daughter likes it.
Yeah, not to disparage, pop musicians. That's great that they do it. It's great that Justin Timberlake does what he does. But not everybody likes that. Not everybody wants to hear that all the time. So the idea that these bands are still out there is very encouraging.
We do a lot of shows with all together with other bands like Slaughter or Vince Neil, Motley Crue. We do all our shows together. And we pack the venues. I mean, it's packed. Rat, we just did a show with Rat. The show was sold out within... 45 minutes or something. It was ridiculous. I'm like, wow. So we do pretty well. Classic rock is still around. I mean, I know people think, oh, those guys are older, But we're doing all right. There's an audience for that. And the funny thing about it is parents bring their kids. I see a lot of kids up front. My daughter watches Glee. Remember the TV show Glee?
Yeah, sure.
I used to watch that show. I love Glee. And she sings Journey and all those songs.
Oh,
I'm like,
yeah.
Really? You like that? She's like, yeah, Dad, don't stop believing. I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah, no, I mean, a couple of my favorite performers are Alice Cooper and Kiss. And whenever I've seen them, there's always so many kids. And I'm just like, that's great, though.
15,000 people.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, my son's only two, so I haven't brought him to a rock show just yet. But, five probably, just waiting for the right show. So, but anyway, I did want to mention...
Slayer would be a good start.
What's that?
Slayer.
Oh, Slayer. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Especially if they're going to do, all of Seasons from the Abyss
something. That's a good start.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I brought him to one baseball game, and we had these headphones on the whole time.
Pretty loud.
But he hated them so much. We're like, all right.
Yeah.
And then he fell asleep. I don't know how you can fall asleep, but, that's probably what would happen. But anyway, I did want to mention, so all your social media. So, and it's Terry, I-L-O-U-S, because
that's right.
People are listening on iTunes, so they don't necessarily see the little
Terry
flashes.
Terry Lewis or Terry
Terry Lewis. Terry Elu, or is it Elus?
Yeah,
I had it right the first time, and now I've panicked.
It's a Spanish word, It's a Spanish name.
Yes, Elus, and that's Twitter, it's at Terry Elus. Instagram is the same. YouTube, Terry Elus TV, and Facebook, you can just find Terry Elus and terryelus.com. So once you get the name down and how to spell it, as long as you spell it right, you can actually say it
right. Arnold used to say the same thing, because people say, how do you pronounce your name, Sir Arnold? People say, once you pronounce my name once, you will never forget it. I'll be back.
Yeah, that's our former governor you're talking about there.
He's a smart guy, actually,
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I've known people who've...
I've met him before. He had a huge head.
He does have a huge head.
Oh, my God. I looked at him and was like, holy God. His head was huge.
Did you meet him when he was being Terminator Arnold, or did you meet him when he was Governor Arnold?
Oh, he was the Governator.
For a radio show I used to work for, I called to, book him on the show, and you could hear him in the background, carrying on, joking around with people, and I'm just...
He's actually a funny guy.
Yeah, he's
smart.
He has a good sense of humor about himself too, which I think...
Well, you have to laugh about yourself,
So you'll do some shows, and people can go to all those things that
have a show we're playing at the end of the month. In fact, there's a venue in Los Angeles called Lucky Strike.
Oh, it's the bowling alley, right?
Yeah, yeah, bowling alley.
Hollywood and Highlands.
We're playing. We're gonna be doing a 20-minute set on May 31st.
Okay.
So it's a Wednesday, and I'm very excited about that. We're going to bring the two percussionists and Chris Trujillo, of course, I forgot to mention his name earlier, but Chris is going to be there, and Al, and six guys on stage.
Well, that'd be great. Yeah, I think...
Natalie maybe is going to do backup vocals. I'm not sure, but we'll
they've
see.
They've had a lot of people play at that venue. You know, you sort of hear about shows that, you know, get... I remember hearing about a show that David Lee Roth was going to do... Pink just played there. Well, yeah. David Lee Roth was going to do with Steve Vai and his Eat 'Em and Smile band. We're going to, like, do a show. And it got so crowded, they actually never got to take the stage because the fire marshal shut it down. Yeah. So it's a small venue,
it's
so that's going to be great, though.
It's a small venue, but it's a great venue. The sound system is amazing. Steve, who handles everything, is doing an amazing job, and it's a really nice place. The sound system, I mean, amazing. I mean,
I've only ever been there to go bowling, but I love.
Oh
the
yeah, you like to bowl?
I'm terrible at it, but it's fun.
Yeah, know? It's fun. Yeah. Yeah, I just don't like to wear those shoes. Somebody else's shoes, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's I understand. I don't understand the people who own their own bowling ball, but when you own your own shoes, that makes sense. You know,
yeah, because... I went there once. I was wearing cowboy boots, but that didn't work out.
No, that's not going to work out. Well, we alluded to how you are also out, going to go out on tour with Great White,
right.
And you have the new album coming out June
sure.
2nd. What can you tell us about the new album that'll be out in June 2nd?
It's I'm very, very, very proud of it. It's a great album. I'm not saying this because I sang and co-wrote the songs, but it's really a... It's a very bluesy album, bluesy, back to the roots, I would say, you know, bluesy and heavy as well, but not heavy metal, just heavy, dirty, naughty, bluesy thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, you know. That's what Great White is all about. We're not a pop band. We're not a heavy metal band, hair band whatsoever. Spandex, not at all. I've never worn spandex in my life, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, see, that's the thing though, because your first band XYZ was in that time period where you could have gotten roped into it. So good for you that you didn't.
No, yeah. I
just referred to the godfather of spandex, David Lee Roth. You know, who
I don't
think he wears much anymore. You know, I saw Van Halen last year.
I don't think to wear spandex because it shows your thing too much.
yeah, right, exactly. Well, maybe that's why Dave liked to wear it back then.
Was he wearing a sock? Or something
from it's like Spinal Tap where you have the cucumber with the aluminum foil.
No,
so you've actually been with Great White for a while, but I sort of wanted to talk a little bit about how, I guess, in 2009 you kind of get a call that they wanted to have
right.
you just do some shows. You weren't actually in the band at that point. Talk a little bit about getting a call like that, and you know, obviously a well-established band. I'm going to assume you knew the guys already, and that's why they called you. But are you at all apprehensive of like, oh, I'm going to step in and take over this band?
Of course.
Yeah, so
I was freaking out. I was doing. I was actually in. What was I? I was actually on vacation with my family, and I got a phone call. And my phone rang, and I'm looking at the phone. It says, Great White Mark Kendall. And I'm like, oh, wow, interesting. So I answered the phone. It says, hey, Mark, how you doing? Mark's really shy, but great sense of humor. Hey, buddy. And I'm, hey, Mark, you know, what are you doing? I'm enjoying my vacation with my family. He said, great. Jack is sick, unfortunately, and I want to find out if you'd like to do some shows with us. That's basically the conversation, the phone conversation. And I said, oh, yeah, I'd be delighted. Thank you for the honor. He said, all right, see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
And I'm like, what? Like, where? Well, tomorrow we have three shows in a row. I'm like, holy cow. So
wow.
I actually hop on a plane and learned the songs on the spot, and I got on stage. I explained to the crowd, you know, say, who are you? And people say, in fact, I got a funny story because I usually wear glasses because I don't know, on stage, I like to wear glasses all the time. You know, like these ones, you know? And the very first time I got on stage and people didn't expect me. They were expecting the previous singer,
sure.
You know? Unfortunately, he was ill and I'm glad he's well now. I did the first song, Desert Moon, and there was complete silence. And at the end, somebody said, oh my God, that's Al Pacino on stage. So that was downhill from there. I was like, oh God, oh my God. And then after the second song, I heard, who are you?
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. But the crowd reacted well. I explained to the crowd, you know, why I was
sure.
there. And people said, oh, that's cool. You would XYZ. Okay, cool, blah, blah, blah. And then... And then went on and then stepped in and stayed with the band, you know?
Yeah, so and you actually became a full-fledged member in 2010.
Yeah.
And is this only the second album you've done with them? Or
We did a live album. But okay. I'm not sure we can find it anywhere, but there's a second album, a studio album. The first one was called Elation. This new one is called Full Circle, and it was produced by Michael Wagner. Michael Wagner has been around for a long time. He's produced Metallica, Motley Crue, Extreme, all the bands, Ozzy, you know.
Right,
so.
Sure. So it's called Full Circle, and you're very proud of it, as we said.
I'm very, very June proud 2nd. Of it.
Very and proud of it. There's the tour that, of course, ensues, which is great. You know, you talked about all the bands that you go out
right,
with.
Right, right.
I talked to Mark Slaughter just last week, and I know.
I love Mark.
He's fantastic. And probably my favorite Gene Simmons impression is Mark Slaughter.
Oh, you should ask him.
Because he has so many stories.
He's so funny. He's so funny. I mean, Mark and I, we like each other very much. We do a lot of shows together. I'd say about 25 to 30 shows a year together. So we get, you know, talk. We're good friends, you know.
Yeah, and like so many guys, he lives in Nashville now. You know, there's like
Nashville.
This huge, like, hard rock scene there that just, for whatever reason.
Nashville is what L.A. used to be in a way that... you know, if you, I don't know if you were here 20 years ago.
No, I lived in New York. I've
New
been
York.
Here about 13 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, 20 years ago, 20, 25 years ago, Los Angeles was the mecca of rock and roll, of any kind of music, basically.
Sure.
The Roxy, the Whiskey, all the clubs, Orange County, we used to call it the Orange Curtain, you know, all that stuff, you know, because going there and playing there was like forbidden, you know. But actually, the clubs were the Marquee, remember the Marquee, Jezebels, all those clubs were fantastic. And anyway, we used to play those clubs because there were so many so many fans and things. And then things started to change, you know. The clubs died and everything, and now it's all gone. There's nothing left in Los Angeles. If you want to play, nobody's going to come and see you. It's expensive and things. So musicians moved to Nashville. I was in Nashville for 2 months recording the new album, and I had a blast. I have to tell you that Nashville is an amazing city, and people from Nashville... or people that live in Nashville are amazing. I mean, really, the vibe, it's really cosmopolitan. It's not what I was expecting at all.
Yeah, I went there about 10 years ago, and I was really impressed. First of all, it was just a fun town.
Christian, you'd be surprised now. I mean, it's a fun town, but now it's even more cosmopolitan. They even have bagels, like New York bagels.
Which is the sort of thing that, you know, when you come from New York, you can't find anywhere.
You can't find that anywhere, you know?
Yeah, well, that's when you know that a place has made it, when they have good
so
bagels.
For you...
Yeah. Now, let's sort of go back, way back to earlier in your career, because you talked about how people would come out to Los Angeles. So you put the band together in France, I guess, in the mid-80s, and you came out to
86.
Hollywood. Yeah, so talk about that decision. I guess it was just, you had to, because that's where it was all happening. I mean...
Well, what happened is I did an album for RCA. I don't know if you remember the record company called RCA Records, and I was just about to come out. And a week prior to that, the A&R called my management and said, "We don't know what to do with Terry. You know, he's a rocker, and the market is in France is not rock and roll. So I don't think we're gonna release the album." And I was really devastated. I was a young kid. I was 17. I was 18. I was like, "Oh my God, my dream, it's over." And blah blah blah. You know, you don't know. So I bought a plane ticket. And I bought a plane ticket. My friend Pat Fontaine, my partner, was already in Los Angeles. And he called me and he said, "Hey, you want to come to Los Angeles? We're going to be rock stars here." I said, "Oh, really?" He said, "Yeah, I have tons of women waiting for you. I have a limo. I have a management company. I have everything." I'm like, "All right, let's do it." So Spinal Tap moment. I arrive at the airport and he's picking me up in a 1970 whatever Chevy Nova, all beat up and everything. No, the windows didn't go up, no AC. And I'm like, "Where are we going?" He's like, "Oh, we're going to Long Beach in a motel. We're all going to share the same room." I'm like, "What? What happened to the record deal? Where are the women?" He's like, "There's no women, there's no record deal, but you're here, right? What are you going to do, go back?" And I'm like, I had $500 in my pocket. I barely spoke English, few words. And I said to myself, "You know what? I cannot go back." Because I told my friends, see ya.
Yeah.
I'm leaving. You know, like, yeah, right. So.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as he said there would be women, you probably hung up the phone and headed for the airport. Yeah, I didn't even hear the other stuff.
Yeah.
So, but obviously you get some degree of success with XYZ.
Yeah, and very well.
What I read in the notes was that I guess they were the unofficial house band at the Whiskey.
How does that come about?
I mean, because obviously the best known house band at the Whiskey was the Doors, you know, a good 20 years earlier.
There was three bands. There was the Doors,
yeah.
Motley Crue, and XYZ.
Oh, right, of course. Yeah, that's why they did their
last. There was only three bands.
Motley Crue had their last show, alleged last show at the Whiskey. Sure.
Three bands were the house band at the Whiskey, only three bands. And we used to have to play the Whiskey once or twice a month, actually, for Mario, who just unfortunately passed away.
Yeah, I'd heard about that.
Yeah, we used to have to play. Someone would come in and a big name would come. We would have to open for them. And that was the deal. So we had a big draw back then. I believe we have the record 637 people or something.
A friend of mine hosts a TV show that films at the Whiskey. It's called World's Greatest Tribute Band. So it's a showcase for tribute bands. Yeah. So I go there very often, and I'm just amazed at how many people they cram into there. It's still such a great venue. I've seen some great shows there.
Great sound system, great venue. But back in the days, you could pack the place. I think we were close, basically 700 people. The fire marshal came and canceled the show and blah, blah, blah. But we were happy about it because the press was talking about it. XYZ just got, you know, so we're like, we're in the news, you know. So.
Well, contrast and compare doing a show like that, you know, at the Whiskey. Then you went out on tour with Foreigner and Alice Cooper, separately.
Ozzy, Foreigner.
Yeah, now, Alice Cooper was the first concert I ever went to in 1990.
Right.
You guys did not open on that show, but it's sort of one of those things that it just makes such an impression when you see, you know, again, I was 14, you see Alice Cooper on stage and he's cutting heads off of babies. He's getting decapitated.
He's theatrical.
And he still does it. He's still so great. But, that just stuck with me. You know, and the next band I saw was Kiss. So it's like, you know, it's a little bit of a letdown when you start to see bands that don't put on shows. But what they all have in common is just sort of this great sound. And I kind of wondered, because this show is the concert experience, who were some of the bands that you saw either when you were younger, more impressionable, or even once your career started? Were there people that you saw perform that really influenced the way that you performed?
You want to know?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
It has nothing to do with rock and roll. Believe it or not, I saw James Brown.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I've only ever seen video.
I saw James Brown. It was a learning experience. I felt so small. I was like, oh my God, that guy's amazing. Great performer, great singer, and for me, the godfather of soul, of course. And I grew up listening to, besides flamenco, I grew up listening to R&B, old R&B, like, Teddy Pendergrass, The Temptations, The Marvelettes, all those bands, you know, Sam Cooke, those great singers, you know, James Brown, Ray Charles. So for me, that's really what I loved. I wanted to do, and I ended up being a rock and roll singer, you know. But I saw James Brown, and it was probably the best concert I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, no, I can imagine just the way that, you know, you just see him on video and you just see it. And I always love the thing at the end, you know, where they have to put the blanket over him because he's got to calm him down.
You know what's funny? Because we were doing a show in Switzerland with Great White, and I thought it was so funny. What he used to do with, so the cape was actually a flag or whatever he had, a cape. So we did it. And I kneed down, and my bass player, Scotty, put over me the Swiss flag, you know, and it was like pretending to be like James Brown, and I was like having such a good time, but nobody got the joke. Like, what the heck is he doing, you know? But I laughed so hard.
Sometimes you have to do it for yourself.
I did it for myself. I still have a picture. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that.
So, you know, obviously XYZ has a great level of success, you know, and I think, you know, and it's funny that I mentioned I talked to Mark Slaughter last week because I kind of asked him the same question, you know. So XYZ had an album called Hungry that came out in 1991. And as most people know, things changed so much that year. Sure, you had Guns N' Roses, you had Skid Row put out an album that went to the top of the Billboard charts, but you also had Nirvana, Pearl Jam. And,
Soundgarden.
Do you feel like an album like yours got lost in that shuffle? Would it have done better if it come out just a year earlier when people were much more focused on hard rock? And is that one of those things that how do you feel when you think about that time, that just it changed so quickly?
I think, yes, we were late. There's no doubt about it. The album came out in 1991. Back then, rock and roll was dying. Guns N' Roses was having a hard time back then. You know?
And by the way, when I saw Guns N' Roses in Madison Square Garden in 1991, who opened for them? Soundgarden. That was the bill.
Soundgarden, all those guys took over. And somehow, believe it or not, I know I'm going to probably piss off a lot of people, but it was a good thing. I think rock and roll was becoming to be cheesy. And we were all talking about the same things, spandex and women and strip joints and everything. And it's just A&R to control. A&R told us how to write a song. And A&R people are A&R people. They shouldn't tell you how to write songs. So we artists, you have artists, producers, and you have A&R people. When A&R people start to tell you, they go to the studio and they tell you, oh, you need a hook. That's not a hook. Let me help you write a hook. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. That doesn't.
So somehow, the fact that Pearl Jam and Nirvana came along is a good thing because, I mean, let's face it, I like a rougher age, more rock and roll. But you know what? They brought something else. They brought some good things as well, you know?
I mean, what they brought, and this is what I talked to Mark about, was they brought something different. It sounded different. And I think people were ready for something that was different because, like you said, when the A&R get involved, when the record company gets involved, and it's like, yeah, all right, well, now we want to find the next Motley Crue, the next Guns N' Roses, the next Poison. As soon as you start trying to be the next something, it's already a lost cause.
I think it's over. So you have to, yeah. So basically, when Nirvana came around for us, it was over. We got dropped within 2 years. We were on tour actually, and we got a phone call, and the phone call said, "You're dropped. That's over." I mean, of course, you're crushed, you know. And then you think, "What am I gonna do?" You know, I'm 28 years old, you know. You know, or 26, whatever. What am I going to do for the rest of my life? Yeah. You're freaking out. And the money goes fast, you know? So, but it's life. You have to reinvent yourself. As an artist, I think you have to reinvent yourself. You have to be able to dig in and say, all right, this is where I am today, and I have to do something different. You can't repeat the same things over and over again, and you're never going to grow. An artist has to grow, you know? Just like a person, just like you have to grow musically, spiritually, you know, you have to grow. So you have to find ways to do the things you love, but in different ways. You know what I mean?
Right. And so
it's
what
like sex.
Did you? Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, you always look for the different ways.
It's like in different positions.
So what sort of different positions did you find yourself doing? Sort of, you know, in the few years after that. At that point, you know, before, you know, between that point and hanging out with the guys in Great White and ending up joining the band.
Actually, I was broke.
Right.
I'm not ashamed to admit it. I had a lot of money. Pat and I were smart. My bass player were very smart. We managed our money very well, and we had a lot of money. We signed a very big publishing deal, very, very big, record deal, very big. Everything was, we were very successful. We did very well for ourselves. And then it was over, and money went quick, you know, and money goes away, friends go away, girlfriends, whatever, you know. I ended up being so broke that I was actually homeless. For a while,
oh,
I was
wow.
completely, literally homeless, living in my car. And I remember one day I was eating a sandwich and that I just bought at Vons for like $1.99. That's all I could afford. And I looked at my credit card statement and it says minus $23. So I'm like, I am really screwed.
Yeah.
I fell into depression for the longest time. For many, many years, I was depressed. I was suicidal for a long, long time. And I was on medication. And then I discovered, I worked at a bar. I was a bartender. I was a dishwasher. I did all kinds of jobs, you know, just trying to make a living, you know. Then I discovered Buddhism. And then, you know, Buddhism helped me, you know, reinvent myself. And slowly, one night I met a friend of mine, Bruce Reiner, who worked at Capitol Records for the longest time. He was the vice president. And he said to me, "What are you doing here? You're a bartender. What's wrong with you?" I said, "Well, it's over for me, you know, I'm done." He said, "No, you have a voice, you have to do this." So I said, "Yeah, maybe, why not?" So I give it some thought, and a few months later, it took me some time to gather my thoughts. A few months later, I started doing voiceover. You know, I did the Rugrats, you know, all kinds of works for Nickelodeon.
Character voices?
Yeah, character voices, singing, lots of singing animation, stuff like that.
Sure.
And that kind of helped me out a lot, first of all, financially.
Yeah, absolutely.
And second of all, being surrounded by artists, being surrounded, there was a challenge, and all of a sudden I said, wow, I'm back. It may be, I'm not a rock star, but it's still in the music, I'm still in the music business, entertainment business. So I did that for a long time, you know. And eventually I released an album out that did okay. I made actually good money releasing the album, and then Great White called me one day, you know. That was it. That's the story.
Right. And then you also, of course, people at this point enjoy looking back. So then all of a sudden you get some calls like, hey, how about having XYZ play this festival or
we
that?
Did.
So yeah. You guys still do that every once in a while too, even. Yeah.
We did. I can't anymore do that because I'm committed to Great White.
Sure.
So I can't do XYZ at the moment, unfortunately.
But that was certainly something that happened, you know, up until that point. That you know, that's probably right around the time, you know, the mid-2000s, people started to think like, hey, all that music from the 90s sure was
it's
fun.
It's exactly what happened. Yeah. You said it right, Christian. Around 2003, 2004, people started saying, hey, man, I miss the rock, the good old days. You know, I miss the good old days, boy. So you know, there was a lot of festivals, you know, M3 and all that stuff. And we started, we did some shows and getting paid well. And I'm like, wow, there's maybe an afterlife. I continued doing voiceover, basically, as well.
No, I can imagine. I mean, I've known people that have done that kind of work. And obviously, it's a lot easier than going out on tour. You know, you're just in a studio much like this one for maybe an hour or two. And, you know, obviously, the paycheck is a lot better than
being
here right
now. SAG. I mean, I'm SAG. So they they give you a script, and you have to sing a part. Or I did lots of jingles for Dr. Pepper, Toyota, I sang a lot of jingles, and you get paid so well.
It's amazing. No, I mean, obviously, I mean, it's fairly well known, completely different kind of music, but I know that that's what Barry Manilow did for the beginning of his career.
Oh, him and a lot of other singers.
Yeah, many others,
Joel Turner from Rainbow used to do that and make a fortune.
Yeah.
I mean, it's changed nowadays. They give you usually a buyout, or they use the original tracks.
Oh, okay.
So they don't use less and less. They use singers. So, but again, you have to reinvent yourself. It's part of, like for you, 10 years ago you were doing something else. Now you're doing something. We talked about that today. You're here doing this TV show. You have to continue. You have to push forward in life. If you don't push forward, if you stay static, you're basically going backward. That's the way I think of life. You have to move forward. And think, what else can I do to reinvent myself? What else can I do to better myself? You know, that's basically it. If you don't think this way, you're just going backward.
Right, and it's nice to glance backward, like we sort of talked about, you know, you getting to do those festivals and things, but it's a much better trajectory for you that's not what your job is, you know, to continue you playing songs from 30
years
ago.
You have to wear different hats, and it's so much fun to do different things, you know. For you, I'm sure it's fun to be here. It was fun to be somewhere else 10 years ago and things. It's fascinating. You have to reinvent yourself all the time. You have to push. You have to push the limits all the time. Push so you can grow as a person, as an artist, as a father, as a human being. You have to push the limits. If you don't, it's too bad for you.
Well, and what better way to talk about pushing forward and personal growth than to bring it right back around to the new album, Gypsy Dreams, which is now available.
It's a good one.
That's why I'm in this chair. But that's basically, you know, that's how people can find out about the new album. You get it wherever you get music, which, as we were talking about beforehand,
iTunes,
the way you
Amazon.
Get music now is, you know, you go on YouTube and you
the
look
internet.
For it. And sometimes you pay for it. I think a lot of people are willing to pay for it. But sometimes there it is, you know, and you don't have to pay for it.
I think it's sad.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize that we are, as musicians, we create something, artists, you know, and then all of a sudden, somebody's going to steal that and just put it all over the net, and then everybody's going to download it. And I think it's really sad for the artist, you know?
Yeah, and as we were also talking beforehand, we referenced Gene Simmons earlier. He just doesn't see any reason to make new music, which, you know, maybe for his band it's not. Some newer bands still feel like they first of all, they want to, but second of all, they need to kind of, however they can do it, whether it's getting your song included in a TV show or a commercial.
Yeah, exactly. You can do other things. You can still do music, and you can just have to realize that you have to place your songs in the music and this, although these days they take everything. They take the publishing, they take writer's credit. I mean, it's
just and you're just hoping to get the exposure and you're hoping you that do it with the
music is not a dying business per se, but it's a different business than it was 20, 30 years ago. You don't make the same amount of money, you know, like you used to, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, but we play songs in movies. We get paid $50K just for placing the song. You know, one song, 30 seconds, $50,000. Another one, $100,000. It doesn't happen like that anymore.
No, I guess
you're lucky if you get $300.
Yeah, wow, really?
It's and depending on how famous you are,
of course. But
you know,
Eric Clapton probably gets $50,000.
Yeah, I'm sure he gets still 50. Yeah. But back in the days, he would get $300,000.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But so however people get their music, they should look for Gypsy Dreams. I'm old fashioned. I still like to have CDs because I like to look at the, you know, the artwork. I like to see everything on the inside.
You're in luck.
Look at this. I have one right here. If I ever see Terry Luce, maybe I'll ask him to sign it for me if I ever meet him.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And you know, that's one interesting thing about the music business is that, that people are rediscovering vinyl. I am not a fan of that medium just because of how delicate it is. And
but it sounds
it's
better.
It's so big. I like this. But yeah, I have a friend who has thousands of records who he would
it does sound better. Saying that.
It definitely sounds better.
I'm sorry, yeah.
And it's great. Though, because at least in some way people are still, you know, there's still an interest in physical music, which is great. But obviously people can get this on iTunes. And again, it's Gypsy Dreams. And I'll run through all the social media, Terry Ilous, and it's Terry ILOUS.com at Terry Ilous. That's Facebook. That's just /Terry Ilous on Facebook. At Terry Ilous on Twitter and Instagram and Terry Ilous TV. Terry, thank you so much for sitting in here and talking to me. It's been great just chatting with you. You know, this felt like one of those chats where there weren't all these cameras and microphones in front of us, you know.
Wait, there's cameras here?
Yeah, there's other people watching.
Oh, my God. How's my hair?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So on the way out, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to one of the other tracks that we alluded to earlier. We're going to listen to some of Wicked Game, the Chris Isaak song. And earlier we heard Whole Lotta Love, Boys of Summer. Don Henley is another one. In Your Eyes, Peter Gabriel. Long Train Running by the Doobie Brothers. Wicked Game, as we said. Heaven and Hell, Black Sabbath. Ride Like the Wind, Christopher Cross. Love Bites, Def Leppard. Kill the King, Rainbow. So those are all the songs.
Kill the King, Rainbow. That's
Kill the King, Rainbow.
People say, what the heck did you come? I say, no, that's actually a really good one.
Yeah, well, the Doobie Brothers one. Talk very quickly, because I read a quote from you about how you sort of...
Warm up. Yeah, I used to
warm up
song.
Your voice to
I used
that
to
song.
Warm up that song. It just, I love the vibe. I love those guys, you know, and they're wonderful musicians. Oh my God. Yeah. So I used to sing that song all the time and said, all right, that would be a good one. You know?
Yeah, no, and it's great. And like I said, I love the album because these are great songs, but this is such a completely different interpretation of them. So it's fun. And thank you again, Terry.
Thank you.
I'm Christian Blatt at Christian DMZ. And we're going to listen to some Wicked Game on the way out.
Thank you.
What a wicked thing to do. Let me dream of you. What a wicked thing to say. You never felt this way. What a wicked thing to do. To make me dream of you. With you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.